Me now in the studio from Mountain Trails Foundation, Charlie Sturgis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, summer kind of kicking off this weekend with lots of events.
Big time, you know, and it is truly here. So I guess let's start with congratulations to the ski areas. They're starting lift serve operations. Both Deer Valley and Park City Mountain are going to be firing up their summertime lifts. So that's going to be pretty good fun. And I know that despite the bike park being gone over in the canyons, there still will be lift access via the gondola and so forth over at the canyons base area. So that's always a fun way to get up there sometimes, so especially when it's hot like it was. So anyhow, a couple things. Let's start with the trail reroute on Mid-Mountain is going on over at the canyons. Trail reroute basically is because of the lift work that's going on over there. It's a really actually pretty, it's probably actually even a better way to go around Red Pine. They are incorporating the nature trail over there while they do the lifts work. So bathrooms, food, and all that you can still get at, and you can still continue on. It shouldn't be any problem at all. I don't know if it actually that that reroute was going to start today. That was still, I think, a little bit up in the air, but you will see it here, if not today, in the next few days. So it's coming, but it's not a big deal, so don't panic. Other thing, you know, everything's going to start to get really busy out there, especially all the base areas, the resort. Park City Mountain does have the Kids Adventure Camp going this weekend. You'll see more kids than normal at the probably focused around the first time area. And you will see these kids will be Saturday and Sunday. They're doing various clinics and whatnot. They will be on the trails lower down. So pretty much everything in that event will be kind of below Mid-Mountain. But you will see more kids than normal on the bottom of Jenny's and Silver Spur and whatnot. So once again, I guess I'd say give them a high five. Tell them keep up the good work and just be aware that those areas will have a little bit more going on. Speaking of things going on, we do have our first leg of the Triple Trail Challenge. The Round Valley Rambler is going to be in Round Valley tomorrow. A couple things. Let's see. First off, this is a half marathon and the 7K. So we added a 7K so that if you're still thinking about what to do tomorrow morning before breakfast, you can come out and join us for your 7K. We are still doing registration. You can still get pre-registered out at the Park City Running Company over in Pinebrook, and we'll be there from 3 to 7 tonight. You can day of. This is one of the few races we really do. Well, actually, that's not true. We do day of for at least this and Jupiter Peak. You can still do day of registration, but of course it's easier for everybody if you kind of take care of it today. You'll have a more sane morning. And we expect to start the race at 8 o'clock for the half marathoners, and we expect to start the 7Kers at 8:10. We should be clear of the area almost by 12. If you're coming out there, of course, riding your bike is a great warm-up. There's parking at the church, the LDS Church. Thanks a lot to those guys that have been helping us out with that. And, it should be a great event. So outside of that, in the trail report side of our lives, it's spectacular out there. You know, what are you going to say other than we need some rain? And we're going to get really, really busy here, especially with this kind of weather and it being as hot as it has been down in Salt Lake. So just remember 10 seconds of kindness, slow down, smile, be safe, because that's all it takes. And there's no sense ruining your day or anybody else's day. We're all out there for the same reason.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, had a report of a vehicle driving on Matt's Flat. It was, I know, called into the Park City Police Department. You haven't heard. You're going to give me.
Yeah, I'm giving you that look.
Apparently, this gentleman was off to rescue somebody, but when somebody alerted him to the fact that there are no motorized vehicles, he basically told him to get off his back. He's 60 years old. He can do what he wants. But
okay,
no motorized vehicles on Matt's Flat.
Yeah, especially on the single track, that's bizarre to some degree. You know, the way we like to see it done is not a perfect world. You should either, if you see vehicles in the Round Valley area or mostly on any of our trail systems, they should either say Park City Municipal on them, Mountain Trails on them, Snyderville Basin Rec on them. But generally speaking, all our recreational areas are not set up for any form of motorized. And if people do need a rescue, they should be going through normal rescue things, you know, like calling 911, letting the police help, or calling, you know, the police might call us and go, yeah, can you help these guys out? Whatever. But yeah, don't be driving out there. We try to, and if you see people driving, yes, we'd like to hear about it.
Okay. Anything else?
You know, Leslie, if you have a moment, we are seeing one thing, and we can talk about this more maybe another time, but we are seeing a lot of e-bikes. Okay. So, you know, e-bikes have their place. All right. In Park City, we basically have an ordinance that does not allow e-bikes on single track. The ordinance does describe e-bike use as for greater than 5 feet tread. So, you know, things like McLeod Creek and kind of the obvious ones. But, you know, once again, as you see, some people have, and the ordinance does accommodate a mobility need for e-bikes. So let's go easy on people. Some people, I ran into a person the other day in Round Valley who just moved here, was on an e-bike, and she has balance issues, right? Can't balance properly, and so the e-bike allows her to get out. And, you know, I got to say, from the Mountain Trails perspective, we want to be all-inclusive, and we want those people to be able to enjoy being out there as much as anybody. And some of the older guys that are out there on their bikes, we're not calling them on it. It's great that they're out. But the ordinance is also designed to probably prevent the Yahoo side of the cycling industry showing up, and then also significant increase in probably what would be unskilled riders being given a bike that has some power. Those two scenarios are what scare us the most. So when you look at the e-bike ordinance and look at e-bike use out there, be kind, like always, on the trails to people and maybe explain it. But we are signing more things, and we are technically, you know, the trail system here in Park City in general can be described as technically a non-e-bike area. But there are exceptions, and we should be nice to those folks that maybe have a good reason for using an e-bike.
Are you getting complaints, though, at the office?
Getting a lot of spottings and some complaints. And there's everything from, you know, well, why don't you just make it all e-bike, you know, which the cycling industry is, in one sense, shoving this down our throats and not showing a lot of respect for the non-motorized easements and so forth that are on these private lands. So lots of other places to go ride, Forest Service, BLM, blah, blah, blah. But right now we have enough people out there, and we don't need another user group that is maybe increasing the hazard. And that's really what we do see, is a particularly big increase in hazard if this got out of hand.
Okay. Charlie, we'll see you next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. The Stoddard-Vaux Basin Planning Commission got its first look at the marketplace at Silver Creek. On the phone with me, I've got Planning Commission Chair Bea Peck. Good morning, Bea.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk a little bit about the Henry Siggs project. Your first impression with it?
We were expecting and hoping that we would get a project in that area, particularly if it involved a grocery store, as an overall look to have a lot of infrastructure and resources available for particularly the other developments that are going in the village at Silver Creek. So this was welcome to see it come in. It does raise a number of questions, but it's something we're looking forward to working with.
Yeah. Now, I guess it just would make sense, a lot more sense, though, to have a grocery store in the Silver Creek Village area, because people living there are certainly going to get in their cars and drive to the grocery store, aren't they? I mean, it's far enough away.
Hopefully that's not true. Hopefully that the village was designed to really be more residential with some limited amount of retail, and it was really never the intention to have a large building, something 20, 40, even up to 60,000 square feet. So this area, frankly, was always kind of eyed by the county when we were doing the overlay zone and redoing the general plan. Everybody kind of thought that this would be a good area just because of the intersection, the roundabout, access to it. And hopefully, Village at Silver Creek and this area, we will be working on, you know, forms of transportation and connection to get to the grocery store, and perhaps keep people from jumping in the cars, running to Kimball Junction. But your point's well taken. We don't want to have to. We don't want to create more cars in that area if you can use other modes of transportation. But it's got to be useful, practical, and attractive. So,
yeah,
to get people out of their cars.
Certainly, the problem now, though, of the community commercial zone, my understanding, doesn't allow anything bigger than 20,000 square feet. So this would require some kind of exception.
Actually, you can get up to 60,000. We've been told by the developer that they're not planning on anything that large. They talked about attracting some grocery stores that had a smaller footprint. But that's why we're going to look at the zones surrounding it, contiguous to it, and see what makes sense. We were interested in having a bird's eye view of the area, and I think that'll help us in making some decisions, whether we can change some zones, tweak some zones, incorporate some zones, do something that makes sense rather than having what could be a hodgepodge in the area.
And that's why you requested the overlay study?
Yes, absolutely.
And what will that what will that show you?
Well, that'll tell me right now what that will tell us what, you know, what were you what tools are we using currently? For instance, Home Depot, Village of Silver Creek, across the highway. What are some of the thoughts coming from the county with the purchase of the Gilmore parcel? So I just like a, we would like a general view of what's going on around us and can we homogenize some of this.
Okay. So that would come back again in another work session once you get that overlay study complete?
Yeah, we expect a work session with staff to go through what those zones are, what our tools are, what can we do within the current zoning. What would an amendment look like? What are the benefits of that? And then after that, and I imagine we would have some developer input there. And then I would expect another couple of work sessions, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, to work with the developer to basically see what, you know, what fits into this puzzle.
Okay, let's see. Later on, you had a public hearing, and there was also possible action with regard to a preliminary plat to divide a parcel into 83 single-family dwelling lots. I believe this is from the Silver Creek Village?
Yeah, this is the Village of Silver Creek. And we there was they wanted to start their site plans on the detached single homes. There were two items that were related to this, and in both they were carving out donations of lots to Habitat for Humanity, which was great to see. And in the meantime, we have the Mountain Lands Trust coming in about a little less than 2 weeks now to present their 95-unit project, which is of affordable housing. So some of our commission members were just a little concerned that we were maybe the cart before the horse. And but I think we have enough time under our belt with all these parties that everyone is moving forward in the right direction. There are some stopgap measures within the development agreement that really do give us confidence that the affordable housing is promoted will go through. The market rate single unit homes will go through, and even though it may be a timing in the planning process, we feel like everything's going to come online, you know, not simultaneously, but certainly within a reasonable time of one another.
So the split vote from the Planning Commission to approve these then was basically kind of a trust but verify?
Yes, I think someone used those words exactly. It was trust but verify. But I think there's enough positive action going forward. I don't really anticipate any real snags. I think everybody is committed to these plans and the process. I know Mountain Lands is, so I don't expect anything to derail that.
So it looks like the affordable housing component then of the Silver Creek Village will come back to June 26. What would happen then?
They'll present the site plan just like everybody else. So we get to go through the details and see what it looks like and where it's going. So regular process.
Okay. And anything with news to report with regard to the Yotel pad?
No, it just went through. Everything was pretty normal. Of course, interesting concept. Seems like it's going to be relatively modestly priced for that area. But most of that process and groundwork and infrastructure and all those things had been, you know, very heavily vetted throughout the entire amendment to the general plan for the spa. So it was fairly straightforward.
And any concern with regard to the proposed the Canyon Ski Patrol and First Aid Building there?
No. I think it's actually throughout all the torturous process about the golf course and maintenance building and all that. And once that all got resolved, this ski patrol and maintenance makes a lot of sense to be located where it's located, and they're going to tear down some of the older buildings, put in something new. But it, I think the plan, and I think my the commission agree, the project looks good, so it'll be a nice amenity.
Okay. Anything else to report, Bea?
No. Great to talk to you.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning. Coming up now at 8:30, good morning. Well, Leadership Class 24 has decided on its class project. In the studio with details, I have class members Matt Brown and David Greenholz. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
Great. So the project you guys have chosen is food waste and composting. That was a group vote?
Yes, it was. First off, I'd love to say thanks for having us here today. You know, Leadership is a great program. Miles started about 24 years ago. And really creating critical thinking with the group. So I'm very happy to be here.
This was one of how many choices that your group got to vote on, David?
I think we had about six total.
Yeah, we had about six presentations.
Okay. And why did this one win?
It was the best well-done presentation out of the six. They took the most time. They were very passionate about their project, about their about food waste, and I think that is why it got voted.
Yeah. So what's your class going to do about it?
Well, what we've been doing is, you know, just kind of tailoring in on what Matt just said. You know, the city has a zero net carbon goal by 2022. Very important to the city to really eliminate food waste from the landfills. They're filling up, and what we're doing right now is couple of different events that are occurring over this next week
around our project. We are aligning ourselves with Savor the Summit tomorrow. We will have we've met with most of the restaurants on Main Street and educating them on composting and food waste and how to deal with it and how to put it in the bags. We have, you know, as we know, recycling has the blue bags. We will have the green bags. The restaurants are been all very supportive of this and will be taking their food waste tomorrow night and putting it hopefully in the green bag. And then after the evening is over, they will be putting that out on the curbside, and we will be picking that up.
And I think most of half the town is probably at Savor the Summit tomorrow. But behind the scenes, as Matt said, you know, a lot of this is all occurring. A lot of organization has been done. We've been training the restaurants and having free educational programs at the library, running them through exactly how to bag it, separating different waste components, pretty well organized behind the scenes there.
Well, and that's what's critical to composting is what doesn't go in there. Food scraps, of course, just raw food scraps work. Coffee grounds work, but fats and animal products don't. So they're pretty clear on what goes and what doesn't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No no proteins, basically, is a key thing.
Yeah. And then so they load it into these bags, and then you're going to, for the year, pick up these bags and take them where?
To Wild Harvest, which is out in Browns Canyon. Do you know Phil? Phil runs, I don't know Phil's last name, but Phil runs Wild Harvest out there in Browns Canyon. He started his own composting. It's really interesting. We took a tour of his place out there. And he also wants to really partner up with the city. And what we're really trying to do is contribute. As a leadership class, we're trying to contribute to this, you know, reducing our carbon footprint and renewable energy and be a part of the city. So. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, getting into this project, we realized that a number of restaurants are already in the composting. Deer Valley is doing a great job with it. Vail is in discussions now for it. And we realize a lot of restaurants on Main Street are already doing that process, you know, both for twofold. One is that they recognize the need to reduce the landfill and saving money as well. So just a great program. And we... you know, I think we're on the beginning parts of, you know, validating what we're doing on a smaller scale to how to get people involved, both individually, the restaurants, which produce tons of waste every single week. And, you know, when you look at, you know, next week when we have our movie Wasted, just one head of lettuce that's put into a landfill will take 25 years to decompose.
Really?
Yeah.
So leadership's kind of providing the education for all of this, and then you're leaving it up to the restaurants to work with Wild Harvest? Is that how I'm understanding
well,
it?
Well, Wild Harvest right now is has been doing pickups, and they're doing a great job at it. I think we're in the early stages of it. You know, there's a lot of other companies that are coming on board, a lot of new technologies over the next 2 to 5 years, even 10 years down the line, of really how we grow this from the beginning part of taking food waste, taking our scraps, composting that, and then what other areas of recycling.
Yeah. And how's the Restaurant Association helping out here?
Restaurant Association's been doing a fabulous job. They've been obviously sponsoring for Savor the Summit and helping us with different areas. And, you know, we kind of carved out our little area for, you know, getting people to compost and raising awareness for it.
So will we see any other events in the summer that you guys kind of do this mass composting effort?
Yeah, so right now we're going to be part of Savor the Summit. The next week is a free screening on Wednesday night called Wasted. It's unfortunately Anthony Bourdain's last movie that was done, but we have a great event there. Connect is going to be there as well. And we also have a few different slots for the Silly Market and out by the farmers and back there, and some specific dates for them.
So Silly Sunday's been doing this since it opened 11 years ago in terms of zero waste. And have they been involved in any of this with you?
Not directly, but we, you know, I think when people go out there and they're in the Silly Market and, you know, you're going through the containers, it's important to dump out your ice, your drinks into these buckets, make sure the waste is put into the specific areas. So I think people are starting to really become aware of the importance of recycling, separation, and composting.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us?
I think David, you covered it. It was great. We're excited about our project. We're excited about our events putting on and really getting the community engaged with composting and getting behind the efforts of, you know, reducing this carbon footprint.
Okay. Matt, David, thanks for your time this morning.
Great. Thank you.
The summer season opens at Deer Valley Resort starting today. In addition to the hiking and listserv mountain biking, the resort hosts dozens of musical acts as well. In the studio with a rundown of what they've got going on, I have Emily Summers, Senior Communications Manager for the resort. Good morning.
Good morning.
So things have been dry for a while now, but you just kind of stick with the mid-June opening to be, what, consistent?
Consistent and staffing and just getting ready. There's a lot of, you know, transitions between the season. But yeah, we always open that Friday before Father's Day. So here we are. It's today. Trails are dry. We're ready to open. We actually, because we've had this good weather, have been able to finish the last part of Tsunami that we had to put on hold last year. So people who rode that Tsunami, that new bike trail, the Advance Trail, we'll see kind of a new ending. It's about a quarter mile, a couple more turns, a couple more jumps. So a new ending to Tsunami.
So that makes the fourth flow trail then that you've got there?
Tsunami was the third. And so we have started construction on the fourth trail in as many years, still working with Gravity Logic. That trail is yet to be named and it'll be starting now. The difference in that trail is it's actually going to connect us down to the snow park base and it'll be an intermediate level trail. People are also going to notice a lot of construction around the Homestake chairlift up there at Silver Lake because that has been taken out. It's being replaced with a high-speed quad, but that's also going to be a summer improvement as well, as we're going to run that next summer to kind of connect the Silver Lake to Snow Park area with this new trail as well.
So once that happens, I mean, you've already got two plus the Ruby chairlift. That would be the fourth lift.
That would be the fourth lift, and really expanding down into the base, just giving another option and kind of spreading bikers out a little bit more.
Okay. So in addition to the flow trail, any other new trails that are being built, just some of the old school style?
Not being built, always working on our existing trail system, improving it, but really focusing on the flow trails right now. But everything's looking great and ready for bikers and hikers this weekend.
Okay. And you also have hiking-only trails as well, don't you?
We do have hiking-only trails. Most popular are Ontario and Silver Lake, and those are off the Sterling Express chairlift right on Bald Mountain. Great views of the Jordanelle and Heber Valley and across Park City.
Okay. I think Summer Adventure Camp's been running for a while now.
Yeah, that opened this week. We have the Summer Adventure Camp. We take kids ages 2 months to 12 years, and that follows the school break. So the base lodge is swarming with those kids, and we've got great programs through August.
Okay. And also the stand-up paddleboarding and fishing at the pond?
Yeah, at the ponds, right behind the Deer Valley Plaza building and the Deer Valley Grocery Cafe, we have this great setup. We call it Pebble Beach, and we work with Park City SUP. And they've been out there, I think, since Memorial Day. So great place to either learn how to paddleboard or bring the kids, have a nice lunch, and enjoy our little beach area down here at the mountains.
Yeah. And is that kind of a freshwater? I mean, is it fed with fresh water?
You know, I'm not sure exactly, but I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw the moose video on that we had posted on our website.
Isn't that amazing?
One of our DJs.
Yeah. I wish I had been there.
Oh,
you know, yeah. For lunch yesterday, but
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he went for a swim right across where you go paddleboarding. That's pretty amazing.
Right. So actually, I think that's on our Facebook page, not our website. Anyway, so we've got summer concert series out kickoff starting Wednesday.
Wednesday, June 20. Yes. Yeah, so we'll do the free community concert series on Wednesday nights, and that will kick off, like we said, on June 20, 5:30 to 8 p.m. Again, free every Wednesday. Great local acts. And then we have two other series that also take place in the Snow Park Outdoor Amphitheater this summer. Again, the home to the Utah Symphony. And they'll start in early July and run through mid-August. And then we have a new concert series, the Deer Valley Concert Series, put on by the resort and the State Room Presents. And this year it's a 5-show series of the nationally touring acts. And that takes place in August through Labor Day.
Okay. You've seen some good response for both of those?
Yeah, we are seeing some good response. Some new names, some diversity in the music, and just more to choose from.
And we had heard that there was the resort had planned to do some work to the amphitheater area. What's being proposed to be done?
Yeah, it's a little bit behind the scenes. We've been working really hard. We actually just saw some time lapses that we'll probably start sharing. But, you know, new sod and bathroom facilities and staging and all kinds of little things just to keep that space nice and updated.
All right. So new sod just to get it filled in nice and thick and drain well.
Yep.
And then once again, I wanted to mention that Deer Valley is vying for the distinction of both the United States and world's best ski resort. This is what done on a vote basis?
Yes. So the World Ski Awards, those came online. They're part of the World Travel Awards about 5 years ago. And thanks to everyone's votes, we have taken home U.S. Best Ski Resort for all 5 years. So we'd like to do it again. And when you win your country, you have the opportunity to win World's Best. So we haven't gotten there yet. But this is a worldwide award. It pulls in millions of votes from the industry all across the globe. So please, thank you for mentioning. Go on, vote on World Ski Awards for Deer Valley as Best U.S. Resort. And maybe we'll get World's Best Ski Resort one of these years.
Okay. And then in terms of work this summer, any areas to look out for with snowmaking or anything like that?
Yeah. Like I said, you'll notice, especially if you're going up there this weekend to mountain bike or hike, you're going to notice the Homestake chairlift's been ripped out. That's right there at the Sterling Express area. There is some snowmaking replacement going on in that area as well. We're always working on that system. So we do a really good job of signing and trying to avoid any trail disruptions, but there's always that kind of, we're always in winter prep mode. So you'll see some of that on the mountain.
Okay. Many changes going to happen as a result of the ownership change.
You know, just a few things have been announced recently, but if you're a Deer Valley season pass holder or kind of considering that Deer Valley season pass, we just announced that you will receive a Icon base pass. And so more information is available on our website. But that's a new benefit for season pass holders that was just announced last week.
Okay. Anything else, Emily, you wanted to mention?
Just check out the event calendar at deervalley.com. And if you're interested in any of those shows, there's all the information on how to purchase tickets.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Emily Summers, Senior Communications Manager with Deer Valley Resort. It's the local news hour on KPCW.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City and Heber Valley Hospital, Deer Valley Resort, and L.L. Bean.
Tune in, my friends, to The Local View. At this time of year, we savor KPCW on the menu daily. Is local news from our award-winning news team, Rick Bruff, Leslie Thatcher, Carolyn Murray, Melissa Allison, and David Boyle. We also bring in the big boys, national news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC. I love your phone calls. It's local, and it's yours. KPCW, The Local View, weekdays 3 to 7 p.m. Tune in.
It's 8:45. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Park City summer season kicking off this weekend with Savor the Summit, the Arte Latino Festival, in the studio with a rundown of those events as well as a look ahead to the summer season and some proposed new policy changes. Park City Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start just with a few minutes detailing the policy changes presented to City Council last week. And before we kind of get into those, I mean, if this policy as proposed was in effect, would we be seeing Savor the Summit, Arte Latino Festival, and Silly Sunday all in one weekend?
I think the idea is if this would have been in place last year, we would likely not be seeing all these events on this weekend. And so we have been working a lot over the last 3 years to really further balance and mitigate the events. And we've done a lot of work on a number of things. But we're back to propose some additional changes to, I think, to give us a little bit of structure and some guidance. So when we are looking at the calendar, when, you know, outside organizations are looking at the calendar, they know how to help us do some of those things as well. I do think it's really important that these changes proposed, they are a balance. Events are extremely complex. They take a lot of our jurisdictional partners to help organize, especially the larger events. And then I think, you know, we're hoping to get back as soon as July to adopt some of the changes as we start. We're already looking at the 2019 calendar and starting to plan some events in that time. Just looking to further create balance.
So even if you got this approved next month, I mean, would it impact changes this summer? I mean, you've got everything
likely
on the book.
Yeah, a lot of things are on the books. Mm-hmm. It will impact things as early as January 1, starting in 2019. And again, we are already, looking ahead. Of course, we know when Sundance dates are in Arts Fest, and there are some other events like Savor the Summit, so on and so forth, where we are starting to plan the 2019 calendar. And those things, we really start planning in the fall for the 2019 calendar.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the proposed changes. We're talking about blackout dates, and I'm not sure, was the council united on this?
So there's a couple of different levels of what blackout dates are. So one of the things that they are united on is creating blackout dates during the peak time. So this would be for event times such as Arts Fest, Tour of Utah, 4th of July, Sundance, just to name a few. But these are times that are definitely peak on our calendar. We've talked to both locals as well as the business community about these times. And the idea there is that the events that are already happening on those weekends will stay in perpetuity until they withdraw their application. But at that point, we don't want any more events on Arts Fest weekend or on Tour of Utah weekend. Those events stand on their own. There are significant impacts that we've worked very hard to mitigate and want to create that balance on those peak times to help hopefully, you know, move forward in the calendar.
All right. Silly Sunday takes a break on both of those weekends, so that's not a conflict anyway.
Correct.
Yeah. Also, talking about expanding the levels of festivals from 1 to 3 to 1 to 5.
Yeah, so I think we want to redefine and reclassify levels of events. This is something we're looking at specifically tying directly to transportation and public safety impacts. Right now, the way that we determine a level of event is really based on attendance, as well as whether you have a partial or rolling or full road closure. And while the road closure is impactful, it is actually about the transportation impacts and the public safety impacts to our community. So, for instance, a level 5 event would be something like Sundance or would be something like Tour of Utah. Those types of events are also something that normally we have to have the coordination at the county level because of how it affects the county and our community partners. And then something, for an example, something like Arte Latino would likely end up being more of a level two, maybe a level three event. So it's not quite as impactful. There's some noise and possibly some parking impacts. But again, just really tying those more to a sliding attendance scale and transportation and public safety.
Okay. And I think taking from, I think it was Telluride, maybe even the Park City Follies, scheduling some quiet do-nothing weekends?
So that was a proposed item. That is, we were specifically looking at the slower seasons at, you know, really scheduling that in after council's discussion last week. That is not something that we're going to turn around and adopt in July, but it is something we're going to keep our eye on. And we also have, I think, the weather on our side for as far as outdoor events. But again, watching the quieter seasons, and that is a time when our businesses need events, and also when our community comes out. I think Shot Ski is a great example, or Halloween, or Running with Ed. Those events are all in the shoulder season, and they are compelling to the community, and so we're just going to keep our eyes on those times of the year.
Yeah, but what about specifically during the peak summer season? Are we going to have any quiet times, or is there something?
So that is something that's going to take us some time. That's a good, I was going to talk about it in a little bit for the calendar. So for an example, this weekend we do have a very busy weekend. We have 7 events scheduled. Next weekend we have the Historic Home Tour, which is technically actually not a permanent event through the city. And then we have the barn doors open at McPullen Barn and Silly Market. That's it next weekend. And we did that purposefully to create a break between this weekend and 4th of July weekend to helpfully, further mitigate that calendar.
All right. So have you had to say no to some events?
We have. So every year we do. We do say no to events, or we ask them to move to a different weekend. And sometimes we just don't have the facility or the capacity. An event might go out to the county, or they might go out to Wasatch County, depending on what they're looking for. So staff does a good amount of work working with events when they do come in with proposals and figuring out what the right venue for them is, and also connecting them to our neighboring jurisdictions, depending on what they're looking to do.
All right. Talk to me a little bit about the plan to number the times an applicant can apply. What does that mean?
So the numbering the times an applicant can apply, that's actually tied directly to our fee reduction application. So we do have last week council did agree to, for one time only, raise that threshold to $300,000 annually. And so what we want to do is really give time for applicants to budget for their events, to plan for how they can pay for them with regards to public safety and a number of other city service fees. And so we really think, with 95% of our events being hosted by local nonprofit organizations, we need about 5 years to help figure out how to budget and how they can pay for some of the impact in the city services.
So would that include Sundance and Tour of Utah?
So Sundance, specifically in Arts Fest, as well as Halloween, Miner's Day, and 4th of July, are events that we want to grandfather in the city and really figure out how to budget for those. Arts Fest and Sundance have city service contracts that we already have some of those things laid out. Halloween, Miner's Day, and 4th of July are a little bit different. Those are very much so cultural events. And so, again, figuring out how to budget for those is different. But again, all the other events would fall into that category of kind of the 5-year plan of how do we help them understand how to budget for it, and how do we as a city also help budget for those events and those impacts.
Well, and as you heard this week, there was no recommended funding for Park City to put on 4th of July. Specifically, you were looking for, what, I think $185,000 over 2 years, so
yes.
About 90 grand a year.
Correct.
Right? So without that funding, now what?
You know, without that funding, the city will budget. We do have a budget, and we will be paying for the event. I think the events in general need time to figure out how to budget for these things and how to stand on their own. As you know, the city took on the 4th of July about 3 years ago from the ambassadors, who still help us with the parade and the event. The chamber still helps. Resorts help. Everyone really pulls together for that event. But we do need time to get ahead of it and figure out what we want that event to be as it evolves into the future.
Right. And again, it's kind of become a lot bigger than just Park City's 4th of July parade. I mean, it's become Snyderville's parade. It's become Salt Lake City, you know, Salt Lake County's parade. So do we need to think about maybe it's we just make it our own if we're paying for it?
You know, I do think the event, to be fair, I do think the event is our own. We worked very hard to make sure that all of the floats in the parade are local. They're a local community. There are local businesses. But I think it's complex because we have, you know, on Main Street alone with over 100 businesses, and the people coming up and working in our businesses are from the Snyderville Basin. They are from Park City. They are from Wasatch County and Salt Lake. So the people in our businesses are also part of our community. And I think that's what's so important about the 4th of July is it is very representative of our community. It's also 4th of July, which is the pinnacle of the summer, I think, you know, for many places throughout the United States. And then we have some great offerings around our community, whether it's the Oakley Rodeo. Canyons is bringing back the 3rd of July celebration. Terry Orr will have a concert out at Quinn's Junction. So we do have a lot going on, and it is a community event. But our community many times extends beyond just Park City proper into the Snyderville Basin, into the county, and into our neighboring jurisdictions.
And certainly the parade is one thing. The party at the park is a totally different thing. I mean, everyone kind of filters down there. But, I mean, in terms of saving money here, I mean, if you were just not to do all we do at the park, would we cut it in half?
That is something that I do anticipate we get back pretty quickly after the 4th of July to have that conversation with council of the changes that we do want to see, whether that's City Park or, you know, further changes to the event. But it might be, you know, proposed to not program as much down at the park and let families come back and really, you know, have a picnic out there and have a good old-fashioned 4th of July.
Okay, let's talk about the events this weekend. We've got, what, a soccer tournament happening?
Yep, so we're going to start the weekend today, actually, with the Avalanche Invitational. They will be around Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This is an all-girls soccer showcase, and those games are 8 to 8 each day. That's both at Quinn's Junction as well as the school district fields. They also have some games around the county, so just when you're around field areas, please slow down and watch for kids out on the fields there. And then we also have the Kids Adventure Games up at Park City Mountain Base. That is today and tomorrow. That's the second year that has been at Park City Mountain before that was out at the Canyons. So if you are interested in that event, you can find out more. It is a fun event with about 250 kids up there. And then, of course, we have Arte Latino Arts Festival both Saturday and Sunday. That is at the Park City Library as well as Library Field. There's art and dance and music and all sorts of wonderful things out there. That event is free and open to the public. I have a strong recommendation for anyone attending that. Please ride your bike or take the bus. Definitely carpool. Parking is limited in the Library Park area. And those events, again, are from 3 to 9 each day. The events outside run until 7:30, and then the movie starts at 7:30 inside of Jim Santee Auditorium.
Okay. And then, of course, Savor the Summit, always a huge endeavor. We got Main Street closing early tomorrow.
Yep, so closures start at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's the east side of the street. We will remove parking at 7 for delivery, so the trucks come down and drop off things for restaurants to set up. At 1 o'clock, we have a full closure of Main Street. That is from the top to the bottom. And then we also have a Galleria lot closing at 1 o'clock. That's just to set up for some restaurants back there, and all of those areas will be posted. Bob Wells lot in particular will be closed for a drop and load lot. That's for taxis or hotel shuttles that need to pull in Bob Wells. They can stage there instead of circulating in the Old Town area. And then I did want to mention that for Savor the Summit, parking rates will be $5 an hour from 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It'll be $3 an hour from 5 to midnight for the event. And just a reminder that the max is $18 in China Bridge only. So if you're parked in one of those surface lots, please remember that there's not a max rate in those surface lots. And then I did want to mention that free parking is at the high school. And then, as always, the first hour is free in China Bridge.
Right. Will you be doing any kind of bus lanes on 224 Deer Valley Drive?
For this event, we do not have a bus lane. And then again, just a reminder that taxi pickup will be in the Bob Wells lot back here on Sweet Alley.
So why are you making parking so expensive daytime?
So there's just a lot of impacts with Main Street. And as soon as we start shutting down the parking, then we're pushing parking into Sweet Alley and both China Bridge. And so that's why we have structured the rate that way.
Okay. And there was some talk about perhaps tweaking. You've heard lots of complaints about the $5 parking during the Silly Sunday market.
So I just wanted to start by saying we do really appreciate the constructive feedback that we have received, specifically from merchants regarding the Park Silly Market. We do have some tweaks, and I think it's important to mention that we will for Silly Market be charging for parking starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. Historically, in the mornings the past 2 weekends, that has been at 8 o'clock. So that's in all areas. We will start charging at 10 o'clock. It is the $5 rate. The max is 18 in China Bridge. And then China Bridge is free for the first hour. So I could come up here at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, hit the farmer's market, and go to some of the Main Street merchants all in an hour and be able to get back to my car. And so I think that that is an important thing. And, you know, all of the feedback is really important so that we can make the adjustments. We're also looking at the data. I do think one of the great things is when we're looking out at the high school, we have about 200 cars parked out there on Sundays, which really helps decrease the traffic and congestion in the Old Town area.
Okay. And you saw what you wanted to see. You wanted to see less congestion in the main Old Town area, and that seems to be working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Still some discussion about that, though, or are you just going to try this out and see how things work?
We are going to try this out and see how things go, and we do appreciate the feedback that we are getting from merchants and from the community. And I always encourage people to call us in the moment and let us know what's going on. If I can mention just really quick, my last reminder that parade applications are due today. Those are the late applications. Today is the last day. If you just go to parkcity.org, that is the first thing on the homepage you will see. So please get those in. And also please register for the text alerts by texting PC events to 888-777 so we can get that information out to you.
Jenny, thanks.
Thank you.